You are listening to Future Based Podcast. We are an interdisciplinary philosophy platform organizing and initiating interdisciplinary collaborations ranging from artists in residency to reading sessions and publishing articles and podcasts. For more information, visit futurebased.org.
Contextually aware means that I'm reacting to something that I see in my direct environment. But then I'm diving in it to kind of understand what system it's part of.
Welcome to Future Based Podcast with your host, Sabine Winters.
My name is Lisa Mandenmaker. I'm a social designer and a speculative designer. I specialize in design for debates. I'm very interested in new technologies and from new sci-fi stuff to the technology that gets introduced to us on a daily basis and how we adapt to it and how it changes our behavior and expectations.
Lisa Mandenmaker is a social designer with a strategic, contextually aware and critical approach to research and practice. She considers design as a tool for debate and crafts future narratives through designed artifacts, using these as a form of storytelling to challenge assumptions, questions, or excite. Lisa's work centers on the effects of emerging technology on people and their behavior. In this podcast, she elaborates about her working methods and why, in her opinion, we need designers to create new rituals.
In the last 2 years, I've been focusing on projects around the beginning of life and the technology that gets introduced in that domain, which I think is a very interesting domain to think about as a designer. And my background is in product design. I did a BA in Arnhem at Artes. And after that, I moved to London to do an MA at the Royal College of Art. I went to the Royal College of Art for this master's program, Design Interactions. This was Anthony Dunn and Fiona Raby were the head of that department. And I was very interested in speculative design. So I really wanted to study there. But unfortunately, this department got shut down right like a few months before I was going to start there. So then I changed to design products and I got my MA at design products, which was also very cool. It was just really different, but I'm happy I did that. I've been working by myself for such a long time, but now I'm doing more collaboration, so I need to be more open about the steps that I'm taking. So I'm learning so much more about my own methods because I do follow a method, but it's so intuitively that it's hard to explain what the method is exactly. But it does come down to, the famous double diamond theory. It's a design theory that you kind of two diamonds, and then you go wide, you do all the research, and then you find something, and then you narrow down to a design brief, then you go wide again, and then you narrow down to the realization of the final thing that you're making. And my methods aren't that linear, but it kind of comes down to that double diamond method. So when I start with a project, I explore the theme. Mostly I start with a very abstract theme, really broad. For example, the beginning of life. And I just put everything on a wall. All the different things that I can find. It's articles or research in science or more culture stuff, films, exhibitions. If it links only just a slight bit, it will come on my wall and then I kind of arrange it. But this wall is very 2D, but in my head, it kind of, yeah, it's something that I can just, wander in and then new connections will come up. I call it a mind's palace. It's from Sherlock Holmes. He does that as well. And maybe that Sherlock Holmes link isn't that like far stretched. It's just, you know, you're looking for some kind of path, and there are so many possibilities, and there's not one right way. Well, Sherlock Holmes always tries to find the answer, but yeah, I try to find different answers. But yeah, the mind palace always works really well as a how do you call it, like a metaphor. I think I can best explain it by my latest project, the Lab Romanticism project. This was a project I started after the design for a speculative prototype for an artificial womb, which was very future scenario thinking about like technology and reproduction. But in order to think about the future, I also think it's important to research where we are now with technology and reproduction and where we came from. So I wanted to dive into IVF and this whole world around it. Also because I kind of know what it entails, this process, but I don't really know. So I dived into that process, and also, this research was two parts. So it was more a societal part, what it means, this process of reproduction and using assisted reproduction, and how the process actually goes. Yeah, because we use IVF already for more than 40 years. It's the first IVF baby, Louise Brown. She was born, she turned 40 in 2018, I think. I didn't know it was that old, this technology. So I went to the fertility clinic. So I did the whole research, like how does it actually go? And then alongside, I did research on different narratives and stories in society. Like how do you know when you want to have children, which is a very big question. Is it very biological, or is it more of a rational decision? And when I was working on the artificial womb, I thought, like, if we have children with artificial wombs, it would be such way more a rational process. But then again, when I was thinking about gay couples, to reproduce is for them also a very rational process. They have to really think about how they want to do it. They have to make such good, they really have to get everything on paper and, okay, this is how we're going to do it. It's way more rational than straight couples. So I wanted to make that more equal and have also a narrative for this more rational side of it. And IVF was a good example of that. So I think what happened was there was so much research. I dived in the process of IVF, and I had all these like different stories in society about reproduction. And then I decided to narrow it down again with a new research question, and that was how I wanted to make IVF more romantic. So now it was narrowed down, and now I could go back to the clinic and look through the romance glasses into the clinic and see how, what I could find, with that way of looking. And the one thing that I found in the clinic was like that everyone has their own, paths that they're walking in the clinic. So when you come in as a couple, if we take, a man and a woman, the woman goes to the left side, a checkup room on the left side. But then the man has to go to a separate room all the way on the other side of the clinic. And then the healthcare professionals, they have their own corridors. So it reminded me of choreographies, because it needs to be in a certain time frame. You need to count a lot of stuff during an IVF process. So I thought about these courtship dances of animals when they're trying to find another mate to mate with. So I had all these visions of weird choreographies performed by humans in the clinic, but that was going to be very abstract, and we're not going to do that. And I kind of wanted to make something that you could actually use. And then when I was researching all the different paths, I was mapping them out, and then certainly I saw that there was, at one point I saw that there was another new path emerging, and that was the path of the embryo. And with conception in the bedroom, you can only kind of guess when it actually happens, and that it's so visible that you can follow it like from the actual beginning is actually quite nice. So I kind of thought maybe that's the romantic part of IVF, or maybe I should make that romantic.
On day one, fertilization is assessed. All eggs determined to be normally fertilized are moved into new culture dishes, but only after two embryologists have verified that the patient information matches. Fertilization is determined based on the number of polar bodies and pronuclei visible. The eggs shown here each have two pronuclei visible in the cytoplasm, which means that they are normally fertilized, having received both maternal and paternal genetic material.
This root of the embryo that became the main thing for the concept for lab romanticism, to kind of find a way to make that tangible. And that's how I made that ritual. So the process of IVF is quite long, but there's one part of the part of the IVF process is that you have to wait. The ritual is for the few days that you have to wait when the most important thing happens in the clinic. It's when the embryo, when the egg get fertilized, which is normally a very intimate moment that happens in the bedroom. But now as parents, you're not a part of it, because when you go to the clinic, you go, the sex cells will be taken out of the body. So the egg from the woman and the sperm from the man, and then it goes to the lab, and then the embryologist will do the conception and the first few days of the embryo. But as parents, you don't get to see even this room where it happens. When you go to the clinic and the sex cells leave the body, you go home, and then the ritual starts. It's kind of a clock and a calendar in one. It's counting down, and it's also based on the matryoshka doll, the Russian souvenir, but that also has to do something with fertility and family. But then you put, like, there's two little marbles that you put together in one little dish, on day one or day zero. It's actually day zero. And then on day one, it goes into the incubator. And day two, and then you put the little dish into the next one. And so you go through 4 days, and then the embryo is big enough to be transferred back into the womb. So when all the dishes are put together, then it's time to go back to the clinic for the embryo transfer. What I wanted to make tangible with this ritual, because otherwise you're just sitting and waiting, and there's all this important stuff happening outside of your hands. So I wanted to kind of symbolize what happens in this lab, and then you could do that. You could perform this ritual together. So it kind of also makes some sort of new intimate connection between the parents, and yeah, make it more mindful, because that's the hard part with waiting. I think that it's just, maybe it feels really long, but yeah, if you could do that more mindfully, then maybe it is something romantic. It could be something more intimate. You kind of, this path of the embryo kind of starts, and then because with IVF, it doesn't always work out. So when the embryo is transferred back into the womb, hopefully it will just stay there, and then it will lead to a pregnancy, but that's not always the case. So I think it's quite nice that you went through this process If you went through this process and you've had an embryo transfer and it doesn't work out, you kind of, you can leave this in your house as kind of a, yeah, a thing to remember this process by. And then maybe you start a new one, but this was a trial and this was also important and it's also quite emotional. So it's, I think it could be nice to have something tangible that you can just leave out there and just watch. And then I think the, if it works out and it becomes a pregnancy, you can just, take the, all the dishes that are put together and move it to the middle. That's kind of the last step into the, last step of the ritual. And then you can also leave it as like, I don't know the word for it in English, as, also like a sort of monument, and you can just leave it there. And then when you're done with it, you can just put it together because it's a kit, and then just keep it or give it to someone else. I think when you're in the clinic, it's designed very well on a medical level, and that all the medical professionals can do their job very well, because of course it's really important that everything just works really well because you want this pregnancy to happen. But it's also a very emotional process, and a meaningful process, but this meaning isn't really designed in this whole process. So I think designers could do that. And I hope I kind of contributed to that by designing this narrative.
Now, premature birth, which is defined as a birth before 37 weeks, is globally the biggest cause of death among newborns. While incubators can save the lives of some premature babies, they can also leave them with long-term disabilities. Now, scientists in the Netherlands say they're within 10 years of developing an alternative, an artificial womb that could save many more lives and reduce the risk of disabilities. Well, as part of our 100 Women series.
Yeah, I think that when you think about like future reproduction technologies, like an artificial womb, for example, let me go back. Like, we use this technology of IVF for 40 years already, but you're still like very much a slave of this technology when you go into the clinic. And I think it should be more, yeah, like a holistic thing, that you have this meaning and the narratives also in the clinic. And there's, I think there's different little ways that you can design this. And I noticed that medical professionals are not thinking about it, that's why we need designers. What designers can do is kind of translate these, if we talk about like technological or scientific insights or possibilities, I think designers can really translate this into something tangible or something that people can interact with, so they can communicate this in some kind of way. But I think it can also go beyond this communicative role and then kind of reflect on cultural things or ethical implications of technologies. So then you go more towards the debate kind of side of design. But it could also, yeah, it can serve as like a translation and a way of, and a kind of invitation to interact and think about. It could also create a reflection, I think. And design as catalyst, you can look at that in different ways, but I see design as a catalyst for conversation or debates. And it's very interesting. It's also, again, interesting metaphor, because it's kind of, increases the rate of a chemical reaction, a catalyst, but it doesn't get consumed, which I think is very interesting. So that's kind of where I started on this design as catalyst platform. I started thinking about design in that way, and that you can start a conversation using design. And that's what I developed during my master's. And I think it came together quite well in the design for the artificial womb installation, because that was really like a tool for debate, because artificial wombs are scientists are working on a working functional artificial womb. This is very intrusive technology if it actually works. So I think it's important to have a conversation on a general level, what we think about this technology. If you start talking to, I don't know, the first guy or woman you see on the street and you tell them about artificial wombs, they're like, oh no, we're going to make babies in factories and stuff. Because that's the first reaction you have. But to have like a more informed discussion with these people, you need to give them more tools to think about this scenario, the different scenarios. And by translating the technological possibilities into something that people can interact with, then you can really have that conversation way more easily. Because when people are standing next to this artificial womb installation, they're like, but why is it not see-through? Which is an interesting thing. Like, oh, do you need it to be see-through? Why do you need it to be see-through? In this way, there's different things that are left to the imagination in this installation. So there's little hooks that people can ask questions instead of just saying like, oh no, we're going to make babies in factories. We're going to talk about this image. Like, okay, it looks like this. How do you feel about this? Why do you feel uncomfortable that it looks like this? How should it look? Then this conversation is way more flowing. And I think that's quite important.
You wouldn't really imagine putting your baby in a plastic bag. So we need to think about a design to save your baby or to have your baby totally outside of the female uterus.
The baby grows, and after 4 weeks, we do the birth again.
It's a very thin line between a dream come true and horrific science fiction film.
The artificial womb project is a project initiated by Next Nature Network. It was a collaboration with Next Nature Network and Maxima Medical Center Eindhoven. Because in the Maxima Medical Center, they are working towards building an actual functional artificial womb for humans. And they're focusing really on the premature babies. So if a baby gets born at 24 weeks, their chances of survival are very low. But if you can put them in some sort of artificial womb for 4 more weeks, they have a way better chance on survival. And at Next Nature Network, they were already researching this future. They were researching the new technologies in this area of reproduction. Also, like all these crazy scenarios that men can get pregnant, or like exogenesis. This means that you have the pregnancy, the full pregnancy outside the body. So they've been doing research for 2 years already, I think, before I joined them, because they needed a designer to translate all this research that they already did into a installation. So I was like, yay, maybe I can do that. So I worked together with the designers at Next Nature to make this installation, the Dutch Design Week in 2018. It was a very short amount of time to translate it into this installation. But I think that worked really well, because we had to make quick decisions. Yeah, and it was just the design brief was how should a artificial womb look like, and it was very free to think about, but also at the same time informed by all the knowledge of the Maxima Medical Center. So it was a really interesting collaboration. Yeah, so we made this really big prototype for an artificial womb. It consisted of 5 big balloons with all these different tubes and things hanging from it, which were all based on a patent drawing from 1955. It shows how an artificial womb should work, and then plus the information from the Maxima Medical Center. We made a new design, but we also did that very intuitively because we wanted to make it a little bit more whimsical than this very lab look that you see quite a lot on the internet. So you have this like a little, yeah, it's an image of a little lamb in a plastic bag, which is one of the first actual working artificial wombs. But if you look at that, you wouldn't feel really comfortable putting a human baby into a plastic bag that functions as an artificial womb. So we were looking at more of a way of cultivation, like a new way of cultivation, like how should a nursery of the future look like? And we kept thinking about like these big pumpkin fields or botanical gardens, because these are also cultivated places where growth takes place. And you see that concept back in like the different sizes of the balloons, because some of the wombs are smaller, so they hang higher, and the bigger ones hang lower because they're fully grown. And the print on the balloons is very organic and unique print. And the color is also very human-like, but then it's in a perfect sphere, which is quite technological.
We're looking at my design for an artificial womb. It consists of 5 big balloons where babies would be in, kind of swimming in their own fluids. There's different circulations with the tubes, circulation of fluids, of blood. It's important to think about this because otherwise I'm afraid that it would just be copied from the lab into our daily lives.
If you walk around in the fertility clinic as a designer, you will ask really different questions to the people that work there than they're used to. And also, I think it's very interesting that they didn't think about stuff that I see. I'm like, why is it like this? And they're like, oh, never thought about it in that way. So then you're critical in some kind of way on how they designed stuff. But when you talk about like more the future technologies, like for example, an artificial womb, I hope that scientists will take the critics and the questions that we raise as designers. But I'm also very aware that they're just focusing on the functionality of it, and they're not really thinking about the cultural implications of it, and I think that's a little bit difficult. Yeah, I think the artificial womb is just a difficult one because it has so many different implications, especially for women and their freedom, if you look at like abortion rights and stuff. But then we go into this whole like difficult thing. I think that the scientists developing this artificial womb will think about it. Of course, it should be on the top of a agenda. I don't know if they are the ones that need to be thinking about it, but I think they need to be open for people that are thinking about it, because maybe it's more, well, I've been talking to a woman. She is doing a PhD in law for artificial wombs. It's so interesting. And she just blew my mind with all these laws that are already there for this type of technology, or still need to be written, but it's very conservatively written, all these things. And I don't know, that was so interesting to hear. And I was like, oh, this is such a different perspective. And of course, the scientists can't know all these laws and what they're gonna change. But I think they need to be more open for these collaborations with all these different kinds of disciplines. If you're working on these big technological developments. I'm thinking about another thing. I worked with Next Nature for a bit after the artificial womb project, because we did a exhibition which is called Reprodysopia. And I did the exhibition design for that. And we worked together with the Athena Institute in Amsterdam. They're part of the VU. And they're really in the middle of like design and science. They're science communication. And it was very interesting from the beginning for this Reprodysopia project to see them working with us, because they're like in this split between science and design, because we are making all these assumptions and, oh yeah, we're going to do it like this. And this, this makes sense, right? And they're going to just speak such different languages. So yeah. And then when you work for a couple of months together, then it starts to take form, and then it works. But it just takes time to understand each other. There was a pretty interesting experience. I've been working with a few very smart women on development of a new speculum, which is the tool they use at the gynecologist. Yeah, we need a new design for that. So, and also when you go through IVF as a woman, you will come across the speculum a couple of times. So yeah, we're looking into making that, making a better design for that, but also creating more autonomy and direction for women in that situation. I think that's very interesting. So it's more the female healthcare side, more social design. But I'm also still very interested in this future area of the beginning of life, and if this is a domain that should be designed, and if it can be designed, we should all be able to discuss about how it should be designed. When you think about like designing the beginning of life, it's easy to think about that you're going to make designer babies and design your child, but it's more about the choices that we make in how we reproduce and the possibilities that are there. And we should be able to look beyond the limitations of like lack of relational or intimate interactions, because I think that we can design that. And then if we design this and these new narratives, then we can kind of accept and live with these new technologies, because within reproduction, we already use so many technologies. So to think that it's all very natural is also not very true. So yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to do, to kind of create these new narratives to produce meaning for these technologies that we use in this domain.
Through her designs, Lisa wonders whether new romantic ideals are possible and how this reality could be shaped with the help of new technology. As we heard, she investigates this by means of interactive installations or by creating conversation pieces. Her approach works, for example, The fragments you listened to were broadcasted on BBC News. At FutureBase, we believe that, as paradoxical as it might sound, by allowing possible futures and imagining alternatives, we make space for fresh notions of both ourselves and the world. Science and design are a not-to-be-underestimated power couple. Nevertheless, I wonder if we are in our enthusiasm also underestimating the importance of reflecting on ethical questions and considerations. Due to technology, there are endless problem-solving possibilities. However, should we aim for everything that is possible? Sources of the sound fragments and more information about Lisa and show notes can be found on futurebased.org. Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, or Twitter for the newest updates. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.